You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.
Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show, episode number 243. You're here with Trish and Steve, and we are live at Oracle HCM World. How are you, Steve?
I am well. Thank you for asking, Trish. How are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well, live and in person.
It is great to see you. I prefer to do the shows, you know, with that thumping bass.
You like
drum
the
beat.
We're really here at a dance background. Club in Chicago, right?
That makes for good HR conversation.
No, it's the happy hour, truly, when we have...
It is.
Except that we're drinking iced tea, if we must be honest.
I know. We're not doing it right.
We're really not doing
it right.
We're
being responsible.
I'll tell you what, though, for all the listeners, it's actually a really fun setup, and we'll try and get some pictures up, but we're doing some interviews here while we're at Oracle this week, and so I how many cameras? We've got two or three cameras on us. We're mic'd up.
It's a multi-camera shoot.
We've got like lights, camera, action. There's a lot going on here.
There's like a crew of like a half a dozen people too back here.
Right, asking us about our style, what we like,
which
right?
is quite something.
I love it. I think more tighter shots of me would be better. Don't you think?
You want those close-up shots?
Really close-up shots. No, in all seriousness, we came in today. We were lucky enough to be at the Oracle analyst meeting, and we were able to talk with Mark Hurd and just some of the other executives. We talked with Bertrand, who had been on the show just a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Really heard about what Oracle has going on, what's going on in the next year, and the momentum, you know, that they have going in some of the different areas. And right now, we're actually at sort of a reception, I would call it, right?
Yeah, I would say so. It's the opening reception. The keynote had just concluded about,
right.
I don't know, a half hour ago. It's the opening reception. It's a very big expo hall. That's where that music's coming from. It's a bit,
right.
a bit of an opening welcome reception for the customers that are here. They've got a pretty big expo hall here as well that's, you know, got a lot of their partners here, and the consulting firms that work with Oracle Technologies as well are here too.
Exactly. Yeah, so a big group of people, and what the plan is that we're eventually going to be interviewing some CHROs, VPs of HR, heads of talent, you know, people in various positions that Oracle touches as customers. And so, kind of in the meantime, I thought I'd practice on you, Steve.
Oh, we're gonna run some questions by me?
I'm gonna run some questions by you. So,
no. All right.
Welcome to the interview, right? And these are questions that I have not read before.
Okay.
It's all a surprise. So in all seriousness, I think these are, they look like pretty good questions about what's going on in the space right now. So this is one that I actually get quite a bit when I go out to different, you know, SHRM events or just events where I'm talking to other HR leaders, CIPD or whatnot, which is how can HR leaders disrupt themselves to create more value for their companies?
Oh, this is right up your angle, Trish. You're asking me the disrupt yourself question.
That's right.
You know, I think there's a couple things come to mind, and I think you know more about this than me, but since we're at the Oracle event and we're talking about technology a lot, that's the first kind of approach I would take with this question, is disrupting yourself and disrupting potentially the way your organization is doing HR and doing talent management by sort of embracing, applying, advocating for, and being like that proponent for modern technologies. That is very easy for me to say because I spend most of my time talking about technologies, trying to convince people in HR and in talent management that they need to be up on the latest technologies and be investing in the latest technologies. But if anything I've seen in the last, I don't know, 15 plus years I've been doing this, and I believe that's a pro tip, by the way, Trish.
Oh, is that your pro tip?
Yeah, that's a pro tip.
Right.
So let me stop back for the listeners. Pro tip for your listeners out here. Once you get about above 15 years of experience in anything, stop counting the years. So like when you're younger in your career or earlier in your career, you might say, I've got 7 years experience in talent management. Or I've got 9 years experience in recruiting. Once you get to 15 years of experience in anything, just say 15 plus. Stop incrementally counting the years.
Now, see, I don't do that, because when people want to know how long I've been in HR, every single year is like a badge of honor. So I do say it was 17 years, because I don't know. It's like, why dismiss those last 2 years? Those might have been the two most important years, quite honestly, right? That was when I was at the top of my game. So I don't want to just forget those 2 years, Debo. So this is one of those times where we're going to...
So you had 15 okay years, the two at the top of the game. So we're
No, I mean, you know what I mean. Two, when you're in the most, you know, the most control, having the most responsibility, a greater amount of authority, that sort of thing, making the bigger decisions in those last 2 years. You want me to just throw away my
you're
two throwing, big years?
They're in the plus. They're in that plus column.
Oh,
plus.
I don't know.
The good thing about plus is it goes on forever.
All right, let's get back to disruption.
So technology would be one thing, right? Okay. And so there have been so many incredible advances in HR technologies in the last, 15, I guess, about 15 years.
That's would that be 15 plus years? Or?
Well, yeah. Starting next year, it'll be 15 plus. Okay. Well, I mean, if we step back a little bit and talk about technology and the enterprise a little bit more broadly, right? There was that huge wave of innovation and progress that happened in that first wave of ERP,
right?
So sort of going from the early 90s throughout the decade of the 90s and really hitting its crescendo, right, with Y2K.
Right.
When so many organizations were either replacing or implementing new technologies or upgrading technologies, often out of fear of what was going to happen at Y2K, but not just for Y2K, right? All of a sudden, these big ERP suites were heavy on functionality, provided lots of value to the organizations because they were so integrated. So huge platforms could be, I mean, they were not easy to implement.
No,
they
were expensive. Right, several years to implement.
Once you implemented them, you had that magic elixir of HR, payroll, maybe recruiting, maybe talent management.
Sure.
Expense reporting, your accounting system.
Oh, benefits. I mean, just
benefits,
like, oh, I remember.
All integrated
remember
in one
day, yeah.
platform, yeah. one data model, all the information.
It was beautiful.
Natively
like,
being
yeah.
shared with each other, right? And that was the value of big ERP, right?
Okay.
It was, even though the investments were so big, often the project timelines were so long, most big organizations eventually went that way, right?
Right.
When you think of any big organization that you worked in, I worked in, 5,000 people and above, they were generally running your Oracle, your PeopleSoft, right? Those other systems, right, for that. So fast forward, right, to what's happening, especially start with HR systems, right? Starting early part of the decade of the aughts, right, into the mid part of the decade of the aughts, right? What happens, right? Technology starting really in recruiting, but also in talent management, start migrating to cloud delivery models, right? So some of the HR footprints begins to move into the cloud, and many companies begin to think about adopting partial elements of their technology stack in the cloud, right? Which was great. It provided lots of benefits for those early adopters because the best of breed vendors were really powerful, right? And had really good capabilities in recruiting or performance management, or maybe even benefits management. But they keep extending that out a little bit further and further. That ability to still have all that stuff now in one place is now gone, right? Right? Because
we've
moved some stuff up to the cloud, maybe went to a different couple of providers for that stuff, but all that engine, all that ERP stuff is still running in the background, right?
Sure.
In its legacy applications. And now you've got a big disconnect, right? And I know you've been there trying to get systems to talk to each other.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, I mean, that everyone faces. So I don't know if disruption is the right word. You know, I know that's in the question, but I feel like that's almost past. I feel like right now, HR leaders, if I were back in that seat, I would really be focusing on that. Do my systems talk to each other? If they don't, seriously, what can I do this next year to move that mark towards them, you know, having some sort of either systems that are integrated, fully integrated, or one system where it's all...
Yeah, so, right, Trish, that is such a great point, right? So most of the work then shifted in sort of HR IT and HR administration to making systems talk to each other and be more interoperable. And when they were coming from different providers, often, not always, but often, the providers themselves didn't have a lot of incentive to make their systems talk with any other vendor's systems.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
Right?
Not at all. I mean, my thing when I was back in that role, it was trying to find what was the one solution that would be the Band-Aid to bridge them all together. and then I paid a whole lot of money back, right? So, yeah, I get it. I mean, there's a need. So I feel like there's a lot of talk about what HR leaders need to do and learn, and I really think that maybe that's not as true. I think it's talked about a lot, but really, I think HR leaders know what they want. It's just a matter of how in the world do you find someone to actually do that for you, because we're tired of having a Band-Aid fix, which is what we've been doing for the last 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, so let me sort of extend this line of discussion just a little bit further and to fill in a little bit about even with some of the things we heard today at Oracle HCM World that we heard from Mark Hurd and Chris Leone and others.
Right.
So now we're in 2016, right? And so we fast forward even a bit more, and the migration of enterprise systems to the cloud, for many organizations have already done this, and for the organizations that haven't, it's not really a question of if, it's really a question
right.
of when.
Yeah, it's accepted now. I think everyone knows it's happening.
And here's the other interesting thing that's happened too in this last, say, 7-8 year period, is the depth and breadth of functionality of the cloud offerings for HR has gotten deeper and wider. So now you can run full HR in the cloud, full enterprise payroll globally in the cloud, benefits administration, all of your talent management, all of your workforce planning, all of your analytics, right? The full gamut of HR stuff.
And to Mark Hurd's point, finance as well. And that's
how I think. No, wait, that was my point. I was getting there.
Let's go back in time. What is this? 2016. Let's go back in time.
It is 2016.
Let's go back to 2012. And I know for a fact when I was in the market and having a discussion with you about it, I said the reason that we needed to go with what we chose was because it was the only solution that could link my financials to my HR. And so it's just funny that like now it's this big thing, like, oh my gosh, it's like a revelation, right? We're going to link the financials to HR. This is what HR leaders, that's what I mean about HR leaders, they've known these things for a while. We might not have known how to do that, how to make it happen, but this, it's like finally, in this regard, the technology is finally catching up with the need.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, Trish, you're absolutely right about that.
I like when you say I'm absolutely right about that.
Right. It was just a couple of years ago, really, where for mid-sized to a large enterprise, in any kind of a complex business environment, you probably weren't really ready solutions in the marketplace weren't really ready to move the entire or the vast majority of the full business set of applications to the cloud.
Yeah, not at all.
We're talking finance, we're talking about ERP, maybe supply chain,
all of that, yeah.
Maybe manufacturing, if you're in a manufacturing company.
Right.
And some of the things we heard today, which I found very interesting, was that, at least from an Oracle perspective, right, whereas for a while, HCM was, for lack of a better term, ahead in the cloud, ahead in development, ahead in customer acquisition, ahead in sort of depth of functionality compared to the other elements of the full business suite. Now the financials are caught up. ERP is caught up. Supply chain is now there. Manufacturing is now there. Here's why this is important to HR people. So let's talk about why this matters.
Okay.
It matters for the reason you just talked about in 2012. When your organization is in that decision process, part of which was determining what HR technologies to implement, finance, supply chain planning, maybe project management.
They were
the head of the dog, right? What's that expression?
Oh.
The tail wagging the dog.
Yeah, the tail wagging the dog, exactly.
So often for HR leaders, the decisions around enterprise technologies are heavily, heavily influenced by the decisions around financial and ERP technologies.
Absolutely, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, and so now, though, that all of these things are becoming available in the cloud in a suite, like Oracle Office, for example, all those old benefits that we talked about from the late 90s that companies could recruit from ERP and HR integrated in a different model, in a different set of systems, but now those are finally starting to become available. And they're just so much better, right? Because the technology's better. It's cheaper, it's faster, it's in the cloud, so you don't have to deal with all those internal IT headaches that you had to deal back in the 90s.
Right.
So it's a long story short. We went on for 13 minutes.
That was a long answer. My gosh, a 13-minute answer to my question.
But it's kind of come full circle.
I agree.
And some of the things Mark Hurd said today, I could have heard him saying, or someone like him saying, in 1999
That's
about Oracle E-Business Suite or PeopleSoft.
So true.
But you guys didn't get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's very fascinating. That was a long answer. I'm taking a drink of my iced tea. Trish, do a show reset or something. I need to take a break.
All right. So if you're still with us after that long answer on the question number one, I'm getting glared at. No, you're
that was a great
here,
answer.
That was a good answer, actually. You're here with Trish and Steve. We're at Oracle HCM World in Chicago, where it's been a little cold, a little snowy, actually, here in April, which is unreal. And we're having a good time. So
I want to turn the tables on you, Trish. We've got a few more minutes here.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you the next question.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
A question that you said you hadn't read.
I have not read any of the others, so we'll see.
All right. I'm going to pick this question.
Okay. Go easy.
What are your biggest needs, or what are HR leaders' biggest needs for creating great user experiences for employees?
Okay. My answer might be a little different than what you might hear from any exec within the HCM vendor space, but I think it all comes down to it really needs to be something simple and intuitive. In order for people to use it, I think it's great to have lots and lots of features, lots of functionality. I'm not sort of knocking that, but it has to be easy to use. You have to be able to pick it up and without training be able to use it. And we heard a lot about this today, and I've heard a lot about this over the last few months, maybe the last, say, 6 months since last HR Tech. It's this renewed focus around the consumerization of HR, and where you really, you know, employees expect it to be like, you know, using HR technology should be as easy as buying something on Amazon. I was telling you earlier today, my daughter wanted something. She sent me a text this morning while we're in a meeting.
Right.
And within less than 30 seconds, I had already picked up my Amazon app, found what she needed, and did the one-click buy. Right, so employees, like, we're used to that as consumers. We really want that in our HR.
Right.
And I'm not saying every transaction has to be quite, you know, one click, but something like that. Employees, they might only use your HR system a couple times a year, and so it just needs to be very intuitive when they go into it. And I think that's maybe the big mistake, is sometimes, you know, different products have been designed in such a way they become so beautiful and so complex, and it's wonderful, but that's not really what's going to make somebody pick it up and try it out.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, because I just off the top of my head, thinking about it, as you were sort of giving your answer there, I thought about two different things, right? You said something about, often in HR technologies, our employees or our managers, they're using them sporadically, if not incredibly infrequently. And that's true, right? So fall into that bucket, things like, you know, I don't know, most of what's in employee self-service, right? Things like change your tax with information.
Yeah, change your address, have a baby.
Life event stuff. Very infrequently, maybe almost never, right?
Right.
And there's a set of technology. Maybe if you're doing sort of old style performance management,
sure,
you could throw performance management into that mix too. If you're really just doing it on an annual
basis.
Even
so, yeah, once a year.
So there's that, right? And then there's sort of a newer and more an emerging, or kind of more disruptive, to get back to the first question, set of technologies that are hitting the market that you really want employees engaging with much, much more frequently, perhaps even every day. So throw into that bucket things like lightweight feedback mechanisms and peer-to-peer stuff, right? Peer-to-peer rewards and recognition. Throw into that bucket wellness apps. Maybe you're doing fitness challenges and wellness and competitions. Learning, maybe. Maybe learning, maybe not every day, but learning, right? If you're trying to develop a culture of more continuous or continual learning, you might be driving employees to an LMS or type of app much more frequently. There's probably a couple more things I can think of, but let's leave it for that. So you got two sets of HR applications, really, that you need your employees to engage with. But the amount of the engagement that you need, the type of engagement that's required, and the burdens on the employees are really very, very different. And I think your design cues and your user experience approaches to those two types of technologies, they also need to be different, right? That whole first set is just like you described, that whole Amazon thing. Show me what I need to do, perhaps even tell me what I need to do.
Right.
Let me do it as quickly as possible, accurately, and let me get out of there, and I don't want to have to learn this, because I don't have time to learn it.
Well, but I think even on the other things you're talking about, on learning, on wellness, some of these other areas, I think it can also be that easy. It just needs to look simple. It needs to not be too overwhelming, because given many choices, employees get lost in, well, what am I really going to do?
I agree, Trish, but I would say the difference with that second set of technologies is that feedback loop or the value that they provide is a little bit different. The first set of processes are all about, I need to complete this transaction and get it done quickly. Can we be done with it? That second set is, I need to complete something or do something, engage with the technology somehow, and I need to see the value in it in such a way that I've got to come back for more. That's a little different to me, right?
Yes.
And I think that has to flow through to design choices, deployment choices, and the kinds of technologies that HR leaders are going to choose when they consider these different types of technologies. Because I think they're really different.
Right.
Was I right? You said
I guess you're right.
Did I just overwhelm you?
Did I
filibuster so long?
Oh my gosh. I forgot. What was the question? Are we talking about this right
now? No, that was question number two, which I asked.
Oh my gosh.
You.
All right, let's do one more.
We have time for one more?
We're gonna, a short one. We're going to throw it back to you with. Oh no. We've kind of already answered some of these, oddly enough. Let's see.
I like question number three, maybe.
That's the one we kind of already answered, though.
This is great. This is great podcast
okay.
right now.
Isn't
People
this
don't know
wonderful?
What we're talking
they don't
about.
Know what we're talking about. Okay, so here's one. How are you using digital capabilities to empower engagement across organizations?
Wow, that's a tough one.
That's a really big question.
So here's an interesting thing. I think employee engagement is one of those problems that's attempting to be tackled, like, from 17 different ways, right? Because I get pitches all the time from software companies and providers
right.
that say sort of their thing is the key to improving engagement.
Can I ask you something before you get to the answer? Do you believe in employee engagement? As a person, do you believe, as an employee, as Steve, an employee, not of your current job, just the concept of your employer doing something to make you engaged, or do you fall into the other camp of you're only as engaged as you make yourself or that you allow yourself to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I'd be more, I think it's more to saying it's a byproduct of a lot of decisions that organizations make and individuals make, which result in an outcome which we often call engagement or lack of engagement. Right? And so it's become kind of fashionable this year for sure. We heard some of it here at Oracle HCM World, and I think we've heard it in some other places too this year, to kind of recast the discussion around engagement and to focus more around this set of decisions or this set of design principles that create, that are individually add up to create this concept of an overall employee experience. So the term employee experience is being kicked around a lot
right.
as kind of the engagement 2.0. And where I'm afraid sometimes that's just going to fall into the trap of being another word we get tired of talking about, like we've gotten tired of talking about engagement. I actually think it's a little more accurate because it tries to speak a little bit more to that set of decisions organizations make, the interactions and the experiences that employees are having with the organization, with their peers, with their customers even, and how ultimately that adds up to being to someone who is more or less likely to be report themselves as engaged, whatever that means. So I'm thinking it's kind of drifting a little bit, maybe because the engagement solution has been so elusive.
Yeah, I still feel like, and I've probably been saying this for 10 years, if not more, both as an employee and then as an HR leader, I believe that engagement is just one half of the equation. Engagement is important, but to me as a leader, I didn't necessarily care if every single team member was engaged every single day. In fact, I expected them not to. They're going to have days where they don't feel well. They're going to have days where maybe they're worried about a child or a pet or a parent or who knows, whatever's on their mind. There are going to be days where people are not engaged, and it has zero to do sometimes with what the company is offering or doing or putting them on or whatever. So I'm not trying to discredit that there are things that a company can do to make you engaged, but I'm more worried about that correlation between engagement and commitment. And I feel like commitment is what has just never caught on.
Well, tell me what you mean by that.
So I view my relationship with my employer, or even now as working for myself, with my clients maybe. Engagement to me is a very fluid thing. that fluctuates in different amounts from day to day.
Right.
Some days, if you even think about us with HR Happy Hour, some days we're very engaged with HR Happy Hour. There are other days we don't think about it, right? Does it mean we're any less committed to continuing the show, to working on the show? It doesn't. And so, much like a marriage or any kind of long-term relationship, engagement to me is just one factor. It's what is the overall commitment? Is that employee still committed? So if I were to ask you on any given day, you know, are you engaged with your partner? Or, you know, ask anybody in your company, are you engaged with your spouse today? Well, no, maybe they had a big fight that day.
Right.
Now, if you, even though they had a fight, if you said, are you committed to that partner? The answer would probably be yes. I'm just mad at them today, right? So I sort of, my view of engagement is more like that. It's like, I might not be engaged with my employer as much every single day on a consistent basis, but over time, am I being given the projects and the interactions and relationships to keep me committed? I don't know. I just feel like that's never, it's a two-part thing to me, but it's never really caught on. I don't know if you just think that's complete crap. You might. But.
No, I don't. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways to look at this, right? And I think another way might be to look at it as kind of like, almost like a perpetual kind of pro-con analysis, right? Or a plus-minus analysis, right? So at any given point with a career or anything, really a hobby or a business that you're running, that you're putting into it certain things, your investment of your resources, your time, to use your word, Trish, your emotional commitment to that thing or that relationship or that interaction. So you're putting all these things in. So you're kind of making these investments, or to look
well,
at
like
it another way, you're sort of accruing like some.
I love that.
Almost like accruing some debt, right? So like you're giving of your time.
That down.
You're putting all these efforts into the.
I see a white paper coming
into this relationship. The other side of the pro con or the teeter totter, if you will,
right,
is the value you think you're getting back.
Right.
Either the value you're getting maybe almost in real time, whether it's really positive feedback, like, boy, hey, I appreciate what you did today, or you did a great job for that client today, or here's a bonus of $5,000 because you closed the quarter on a high note. Whatever all those things are, those are or there may be long-term things like, hey, I'm working for a really great company, for a great boss, with a good team, and I'm learning skills that are going to benefit me for the next 10 years of my career, right? A longer-term kind of value prop. But you can sense it, you can feel it, and in your mind, you're almost kind of doing a little almost present value analysis, right? Comparing whether or not the value of all those things, those short, medium, and long-term things, both tangible, both intangible, maybe even some physical, some emotional, whether the value of all those things you're getting back outweighs consistently enough what you're putting in.
No, I don't even think it's outweighs.
Balance.
Just a minute, when you said the teeter-totter, that's the perfect example to me, because, you know, if you're a little kid and you're playing on the teeter-totter, if you're always at the bottom holding somebody up, that's no fun, and if you're always the one, you know, up in the air, that's no fun. So yeah, it's about finding that sun. And again, some days, you're a little lower, some days you're a little higher, but overall, you're still willing to stay in the game, and to me, that's what engagement is, but I feel like that's not what's being talked about in the industry.
Yeah, and I think it's a complicated thing, and I think sometimes where the engagement stuff has gone the wrong direction is we've kind of tried to, because that's what we want to do, we want to solve problems.
Yeah, you want to ask survey questions and have someone say, oh, if you do these five things for me, company ABC, then I'll be engaged. Well, that's just a part of it.
Maybe oversimplified
that's just
it a little
part
bit too. And I guess the last thing I'd say on it, we could probably let it go or maybe think about it for another conversation, is I think that process, if you buy into it, whether it's your focus on commitment or my sort of this idea of the debt versus the value of the investment,
and
the balance of that, that to me is so individual that it's very difficult for organizations without doing a lot of heavy lifting and really getting to know their people, or managers getting to really know their teams. It's really difficult to apply blanket solutions that will possibly impact either of those kinds of assessments for a wide number of people at the same time, right? Because what you're going to value or what you'll be more committed to might be a lot different from me, and we could be doing the same job in the same team, a million other circumstances in our lives will mean you're going to value some things more than me or differently than me.
That's true.
And I think that's really important.
That you know, we've sort of let managers and leaders off the hook for all these years by saying they don't have to do that. To me, that's not, I'm not going to say it's easy for everyone, but it's a fairly easy thing to do. If you get to know your people on your team, you should know kind of what they like and what motivates them really by just having conversations. I don't care if it's coffee or whatever. Like, if you're, now, you know, I'm going to hear, you know, people are going to be like, no, if I'm an introvert, I can't do that. All right, there's a million excuses. I'm just saying it's possible.
Those introverts never shut up about being introverts.
Which is ironic, right? It's very strange. But, no, I think, truly, if you just talk to your people, and I'll tell you, one of the best examples I had, and I'm not overly motivated by money, and I will tell you, I'm also not motivated by recognition. I actually get embarrassed by it. So, like,
I think you are doing a fantastic job on this podcast, though.
The whole social recognition. Oh my gosh, if my boss ever like put something out publicly, I would be embarrassed. But no, when I worked in healthcare at the Children's Hospital, we did a thing where when you first started, they asked you all these questions on your orientation day, like all these different things, like where do you like to shop, what kind of candy do you like, these really personal different things. Then they tucked that away. And there was one day I had been working really hard. I counted, it was like 17 projects going on in the hospital at that point. I was really working. And my boss, I didn't see very often, okay?
Right.
Boss shows up with this huge, I mean like foot tall, maybe half a foot around barrel of Tootsie Rolls.
Tootsie Rolls
are my favorite. Like, I love Tootsie Rolls, right? I would have been happy if the boss had showed up with like a pack of Tootsie Rolls, but quite honestly, like, that still sticks in my head all these years later that they took time to find a reward for me to just hurt me, like, but say thanks, you know, and it was Tootsie Rolls. So it doesn't always have to be money, but it showed that boss knew me. Right? No one else in that hospital would have been motivated by Tootsie Rolls, maybe. I don't know. But
Right. Get
what I'm saying? So
I do get
it. Was it that hard for them to, you know, to find out what... And it might be, like, if they said, oh, my favorite store is Home Depot, maybe I would have gotten a $10 gift card to Home Depot. Or it's... I think if you empower your managers to have some sort of budget for small recognition even, there are ways you can actually get to know your people. And not everybody wants a Starbucks card, but, right,
yeah.
Find out what it is they do like. I had another one where we had a woman at PwC where she, you know, she's a tax person and she always had to work this time of year.
Right.
Ungodly hours, right?
Sure.
We all did. It was the tax department. It was, you know, April, and she always wanted to have a garden.
Right.
That was her thing. And so finally, someone said, you know what? We're going to let you off every day by 4 p.m. during tax season, and we're going to cover your work, but then afterwards, you're going to, like, help somebody else out.
Right.
She got to go and have her garden. It was amazing. Like, the amount of thought that went into that was very little, but the reward was huge because that employee felt very valuable, very engaged, right? Because, again, it goes back to figuring out what that individual's personal needs are, and it's not about a lot of money. It's just about paying. To me, engagement is about paying attention. Are you willing to pay attention to your employees, really? Or are you just willing to throw a program together and call it engagement and be done with it? And have the same turnover you guys have.
And it's a very individualized thing. I think those are great examples, Trish. I think we're working on something here, which I think is pretty interesting.
So, that's it for the show.
I think it's good. You said it all.
I think we said it all. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the HR Happy Hour. Stay tuned for more from Oracle HCM World on Periscope, on Twitter,
on the
Snapchat,
HR Happy Hour show?
And on the HR Happy Hour show.
Really cool.
Very good.
All right. See you next time. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.